it helps me to find out if I'm getting the message out, if I say something that was interpreted or implied differently than I was trying to say. I like to hear and get that feedback back. And I don't have all the answers. I go to the scriptures to find the truth, and I go to history to find the truth of what happened in history. It's the Bible, though, that is the ultimate truth. And so as you hear what I'm going to be talking about this morning, you might be thinking, wait a minute, is he doubting the Bible? Let me emphatically say, no, I don't doubt the Bible. But the approach to this whole series is to talk with someone who doesn't accept the Bible. And that's the world. How many times have you heard people say, you believe that fairy tale? Well, if they've got that concept that the Bible is a fairy tale, how can you use it to teach them the truth, right? They're not going to accept it. They don't even care. People don't care. They don't care about something as important as this, generally speaking. You do. You're here. Whether you're a believer or a non-believer, I don't know all of you, but whether you are one or the other, you care about something because you're seeing this is a discussion on the resurrection of Jesus Christ, proving that resurrection. We left off last time with the fact that Christians were considered atheists in the first, second, third centuries. Why? Because they did not acknowledge the Roman gods. You're an atheist. You don't believe in their gods. And not accepting the gods was offensive to your fellow Roman citizen. It was offensive to your friends, to even to your families. If you don't accept their God, that is offensive to them. In fact, it was more than offensive to them. It was frightening to them. Can you imagine that? What you believe, if you're a Christian, and what you believe about Jesus Christ was frightening to them. It'd be helpful to understand that Roman mindset as to why it was frightening to them. How could these things be? Because we don't see that. Oh, yeah, there's challenges in our lives today and the culture we live in, but this is frightening to them. So let's look at some of their beliefs and their superstitions. Sometimes if something was bad that was happening to you, it means your God is angry at you. Whatever God you worship as a pagan God, that means like he's angry with you. That's why it's going bad. Well, let's see. Well, who could he be mad at that makes him so angry at me? Because I'm being a good pagan citizen or a pagan follower. It's them. It's those Christians. They're denying my God exists, and therefore he's going to take it out on me if I don't do something about it, or if I just tolerate them. You were blamed for everything. If there was a fire, if there was a flood, something going on, who did it? The gods did it. Well, who's getting the gods mad? You. Because you're denying him that he even exists. Therefore, since you are denying him and you're causing all the problem, remember what Tacitus said? Enemies of mankind. That's what you were in the first century. You had to be eliminated. That's how serious this was. You had to be eliminated for crimes against our God. That's the mindset. There were trade guilds. You work in unions today. Some do, some don't. But in the first century, there were a lot of trade guilds and the skills that you had for work. And you had to be a member of the trade guilds, right? Well, if you didn't accept the God of that trade guild, because they all had their protector, if you didn't accept him and pay your sacrifices to that God, you're out. They don't want any part of you there if you're not accepting their God. And once you got kicked out, it's going to be tough getting a job. See the pressure? That was just the simple pressure, economical pressure jobs. Because you were betraying their friendship. You're betraying their family. I'm sorry, your family. You're betraying everybody. You're an enemy of the state. I didn't understand that. For many years, I didn't realize what was going on in the first century, second century, even in the 300s, the third century, the fourth century. I didn't realize that. You're enemies of the state as a Christian. It was illegal for you to be a Christian until about 325, when Constantine made it legal. So there were massive efforts to eliminate this offensive religion. It's gotta go. Remember I mentioned yesterday, if you're a Roman citizen, you can accept and believe in all the different gods you wanted. You see, Christianity couldn't. And this massive effort came not only from the authorities of Rome, but your fellow citizens, your neighbors, the people you went to work with, the people you knew, even your own family was involved with this effort. Do you remember that the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had and Daniel interpreted the dream? Do you remember the feet of that beast? What was the feet made of? You remember what it was made of? Clay and iron. And that was its weak point, wasn't it? That mixture, just clay and iron, just wouldn't mix. And it would just crumble away. That's the first century of Rome. The cultures of all these people from different lands that Rome conquered with their different belief systems and ideologies all together. Different superstitions, different gods. Multicultural. And Rome recognized that that was a weakness, this diversity. And so they had to come up with something. They needed something to unite the people, to unify the people, all these different nations and cultures. Well, what could that be? Well, you can continue worshiping your God. It's all about religion, by the way. Today, 2018, it's all about religion. It was then. And so you can worship your pagan god, God A, God B, God C, all of the different gods, whatever culture you come from. But we're going to unite as a people, because that's not unity. We're going to unite as a people worshiping Caesar. Oh, that's a great idea. And so they instituted Caesar worship. As a Roman citizen, you would give and pay your sacrifice also to Caesar. That was a unifying attempt. That was the main idea. And so they introduced this unification idea, this concept of Caesar worship. There's a lot more than that also going on, but that was it. And for the most part, the different cultures accepted that. Okay, this is good. But not you people. You would not accept worshiping Caesar. Not even acknowledging him as God. You didn't go along with the politically correct crowd or the religiously correct crowd in the first century. And by professing Christianity, you put yourself at great risk. You saw that yesterday in the evidence that we looked at yesterday. The whole empire, you went against it. You were considered enemies. You Christians, you're making it very difficult to keep the unity of this great Roman Empire, the iron and the clay, from the dream hundreds and hundreds of years earlier about this empire that was strong and powerful and mighty, but weak in a particular area. That was it. And you had to be eliminated. This new faith had to be eliminated from every aspect, from the national survival and from my personal survival as a pagan. You had to go. Now, the reason the world empire, this Roman Empire, was able to exist is because it flourished, because it had, well, it could kill on demand, pitilessly, without mercy. It could kill and will kill. And they would suppress anyone who would dare go against it. Anybody. Crushed. And they had military troops everywhere. So these stormtroopers were able to go around and had the authority to carry out Rome's orders, whatever they were. I remember I told you briefly yesterday about Diocletian, 301. It was still illegal to be a Christian then, right? And that's when he went around and said, well, I know what the problem is. It's their documents they're reading. And he went out and, well, the stormtroopers went out and they captured people and said, you give us your scriptures, your documents, stop reading them or we kill you. Well, you don't give them up, you die. You were haters of humanity. That's a hard thing for me to understand living in the United States today, living in our world. I'm considered a hater of humanity. Yeah, in the first century, you went against Pax Romana. You were the threat to the whole system that gave them unity. You had to be eliminated. Pax Romana is Latin for Roman peace or the peace of Rome. And it existed actually for several years, many generations. I think it was 37 BC under Augustus until about 180 AD at the death of Marcus Aurelius. They had this Pax Romana, peace in Rome. Don't forget now, Rome was not a it was not just a nation. At one time it was, but it wasn't a small nation or even a big country like us, United States, big country. It was a world empire. An empire. Here's a map of it, showing the extent of that empire. That yellow represents the Republic in 31 BC. The green represents the gradual conquested territories under the reign of Augustus. And then the pink areas represent client states, states that owed their allegiance to Rome. So you can see this is the size of it, basically. Now, to give us an example of that size, I compared it with the United States. We know how long is the, how wide is the United States? About 3,000 miles, right? Wide. What is it, 1,500 or 1,800 miles tall? I could be wrong on that. I didn't check that. Somewhere's in that length. But when you place the map of that Roman Empire over the map of the United States, look at that. I found that to be impressive. It's almost the same size. Actually, maybe it's a little taller in size. But that's the same scale of the two entities. I found that interesting. Starting with Augustus, Rome enjoyed internal peace, that Pax Romana. And we're talking about several generations. And nobody wanted to interrupt this peace and go back to that turmoil. So anything that would challenge Rome would be stopped, not tolerated. How did the Christians operate? With swords? No. First three centuries, they just preached peace. They didn't use weapons of any kind to defend themselves or to spread their Christianity. But violence was clearly used against you. Strong military violence. Why? To eliminate you. I know I'm sound like I'm repeating myself, but I'm going to because I can't comprehend that time period. But this is important as we get to the next few points. You were hated. You needed to be destroyed. And it wasn't just the authorities, the Roman authorities. You'd have the common folk rising up against you, your neighbors turning you in and abusing you, insulting you, and they wouldn't care if you got killed. And if you remember yesterday, we talked about Nero in 64 AD, made it an official policy, persecute the Christians by Rome itself. So now you can begin to understand why, like I said yesterday, and I'll say it again, Christianity should have failed. It should not have gone anywhere under these circumstances. Not only did it not fail, though, it exploded on the world stage almost overnight. Faster than any other movement in the history of mankind. I don't think we get that point. Let's compare that to the expansion of this great empire, Rome. How fast did it take Rome to get to where it's at? You remember Rome when it was first around? Historians tell us it was 320 BC and maybe Maybe you can see it. Maybe that little red spot, you could recognize the what eventually became Italy. That was Rome. It's a real little republic, 320 BC. Let's watch it expand. 20 years later, 300 BC, it grew slightly to this size. And then about 270 BC, about 50 years later now, and on its expansion, it pretty much grew to the size of what we now call Italy. Not bad growth, okay? Took another 50 years to grow to this point. You can start seeing it's now starting to wiggle its way over to the east, towards Spain. Not as fast as the first 50 years, but at 100 years old, you can see it's making that march, expanding. There's a huge expansion here going all the way now into Spain. And there's even, the next one. This is, by the way, this is 130 years into the expansion. Here you go. Now you can start seeing it going across the Mediterranean a little bit. Which, by the way, remember I showed you that map of the two? I forgot to mention this. The difference between the size of the U.S. and the size of the Roman Empire is roughly the same. The difference is, though, right in the middle of the Roman Empire, they had that big pond, which made it difficult to get around, right? Didn't stop them. They started making progress going to the other side of that Mediterranean Sea during that time period. Next 70 years now, you're looking at 250 years of their existence. You can see a lot of growth. We're looking at a total 250 years. And this is now getting towards the end of the Grecian Empire. So they're not an empire yet. They're still a republic. Rome, still a republic. Another 30 years of conquest brings us to 40 BC. Still a republic, 280 years into their existence. And now you can see, they've got almost all of that area covered, right? But then when we get to the time of Christ, roughly 20 AD, now it's considered a world empire. 340 years later from the time that little republic was over there, 320 BC, completely surrounding the Mediterranean Sea. So you're getting an idea now. Oh, but wait a minute, let's go another one more step. 120 years later, now making it 140 AD. 140 AD, the empire has grown to its largest size that it will expect to be, right here. That's the size of the Roman Empire. Maybe a little bit more here and there, but that's roughly what it was. 460 years from its early days as a small republic, and now all this growth during that time period. And how did they do it? Little brochures here and there. You got to come to Rome. You got to believe in Caesar. No, they didn't do it that way. By the fist, by the sword, by conquering, destroying everything in its path. That's how they expanded the Roman Empire. Compare that to Christianity. They used the sword. No, Christianity didn't use the sword. Oh, wait a minute. Someone's going to say, well, what about the Crusades? That wasn't Christianity. We'll talk about that in another day. The first 300 years, it was persecution, people trying to kill you. Execute you. And you did it with words. Well, the first century, you had the initial presenters doing it with miracles. Oh, they didn't have the miracles, forget it, you'd never get anywhere. You needed the miracles to prove it was from God. But all for the second century, third century, even into the fourth century, speaking words about something. We're going to look at that. Where did it start? It started around 33 AD in a little place called Judea. And by 64 AD, what did Tacitus tell us? He told us that this mischievous, evil superstition spread all the way over here to Rome. 30 years, it got as far as Rome in 64 AD. Now, it's not the size of the Roman Empire yet, but in 30 years, look how it got, by speaking. Now, remember what I said yesterday, I didn't say it today. We're looking at this through the eyes of a non-believer, someone who doesn't believe the resurrection happened. So I'm suggesting you consider the facts of history and then answer some of my questions that I have. Okay, so it was in 30 years. And according to Paul, in Paul's lifetime, first century, he claimed that the gospel message, the message of Christ, was preached to the known civilized world. What was the known civilized world? That mark right there. Am I in the way of that the whole time? That's it. That's the civilized world. The whole message was preached by that time in the first century. He's not the only one. We have secular writings from men of the second century who lived on the opposite ends of that empire, and they record how Christianity spread even further than that during the second century. So what you really have is what took Rome 460 years to accomplish an expansion of its system. It took Christianity starting around 30 years to less than 100 years to go beyond that. And it did it without violence. And it did it at the same time you were being crushed. At every corner, you were being crushed. I mean, this is impossible to happen. And I said all this to say again that Christianity should have failed. Not grow, and definitely not to expand in such a short period of time like it did. So the question remains. I said it's not possible. Okay, that's just me. Then tell me, how was it possible? We looked at evidence yesterday of the people that were willing to face death under this regime, under this powerful empire. In fact, what did Lucian of Samosata call it? You guys had contempt for death. He was like, what? That's what was common among these people. Tacitus recorded the exact details of some of those things you faced. Dragging you off, your family off, throwing you into Colosseum, facing those animals and soldiers. And both of those guys, they're not friends of Christianity. I mean, you can say, oh, they're Christians, they're just making this up. No, these are the enemies of Christianity, and they're writing it as just as a matter of fact. These things happened. They died these cruel deaths. Everything was against them. For 300 years, I got to keep saying that. And I say that because of our non-believing friends who are skeptics and say, Christianity just gradually grew over centuries and centuries and centuries. No, 300 years, it was like this, and it should have failed. Why didn't it fail? Why didn't it fail? Obvious answer, at least for me, the resurrection of Christ. Okay, but let's reverse engineer this thought. Let's reverse engineer what I'm saying. How could Christianity even have started without it, without the crucifixion, without the resurrection? Everybody knows the crucifixion happened. Everyone, all your scholars and historians, that everyone's on the same page on that. We know he lived, okay. But we don't know, we don't really think. Okay, if he didn't get raised from the dead, then let's look at it from the historical point of view, the facts on the table, you the jury, and tell me how this happened. Is there a possible explanation how this movement and how it came about actually happened in natural occurrences, under natural, that, you know, evolutionists try to tell us, you guys believe in miracles, there's no such thing, everything's natural. Okay, let's take your point of view. It's all natural. Give me the natural. Tell me how this movement became what it was, what it is, naturally. Natural means. Is there any hypothesis, any theory that can simply explain Christianity without the supernatural? I'm looking for that. I'm looking for that. Let me know. Can you explain it through natural processes without the resurrection? And if you can, then you've got an advantage. Because that's the simple answer. Because we see it in history. And there it is. It's simple. This is how it happened. That gives you an advantage. Why? Because the supernatural is not a simple answer. It's not an easy answer. It doesn't happen every day. We don't see supernatural things. So if you can show it to me as a natural occurrence, you got me. I'm there. I'm with you. This is all a hoax. If it happened naturally. Okay, let's look at it from that point of view. If the resurrection didn't happen, then what does that mean? In its simplest terms, what does it mean? If the resurrection didn't happen, what does it mean? It means that in the first century, there was a man by the name of Jesus, who the whole world today knows about or heard of him. He died. And he stayed dead. Right? Without the resurrection, the man died. That we know. Okay. And if he died without coming back from the grave, then that means what? If he didn't come back from the grave, what's that? Oh, that's, then we start getting into some scary stuff. Right. The non-believer friend over here, he doesn't look at us being hopeless. You guys are foolish. Remember we talked about that yesterday. You're foolish for thinking that. Okay, fine. But if he died and he didn't come back from the grave, that means he's still dead. Right? I mean, that's what it means. He's still dead. And therefore, it's his death that started the movement. You see, you and I say, no, the resurrection started the movement. Okay, that's fine. Our non-believing critical friend over here says, no, there's no such thing as a resurrection. Okay, natural processes, death. That's what happened. Yes. Under natural processes, the death is what caused the movement. I don't know if you realized that before. The death is what had to cause the movement. And all of that enthusiasm and energy with the first century Gentiles and the first century Jews. The death only is what did it. And why do I say that? It's because that's when the movement started. See, you guys, you Christians, you got the whole story because you read about it here. But if you just look at the facts of the case and what's going on in the first century, the movement didn't start before he died. I thought it did. It didn't. That's a fact that our non-believing friend is going to throw in your face. Watch. Oh, if it did start at his death, it's the most unprecedented movement in the history of mankind. Because movements don't start at a man's death. They start before he dies. And that's why you might be sitting here, what's he talking about? Christianity started after Jesus died? Yeah, because all movements start before the man dies. How could this movement simply start after his death? That's an impossibility, and you're acknowledging it, and so is our non-believing friend. Because throughout history, we only find movements that start during the life of an individual before he dies. Can you think of anyone that... Don't think of Jesus Christ for a minute, but can you think of anyone else that a movement started at his death? Started a movement of this magnitude. The whole world knows Christianity, whether it's corrupt Christianity or true Christianity. I'm not talking about that, but the whole world knows Jesus Christ. Any other movement? Anyone want to guess? Okay, I'll throw a guess out. What about Muhammad? Yeah. No. Muhammad's movement, he proves my point. Islam started and it grew and it flourished while he was alive. Right? It didn't start from ground zero where it was nothing and then you all of a sudden have the movement of Islam. How did he, while he was alive, promote his movement? Violence, sword, and he converted a lot of people to his way of thinking and his ideology, and they all came on board, and they all picked up the sword, and they went out and conquered while he was alive. He personally motivated thousands of people to his way of thinking. And by the time of his death, Islam was well established with all of its rules and regulations and doctrines, of which he wrote. It was well established. Before he died, it was strong and flourishing. So, albeit by swords, but still, it was going strong before the man died. You see the point I'm trying to make? There was nothing unusual about Islam coming into the world and starting, this movement starting around a man. And so some people try to make that comparison, Christ and Islam. No, it's quite different. Look at the facts surrounding Jesus. Now, you saw the example of a man over here, Islam. Look at the facts involving Jesus. It's all the opposite. Yeah, okay, I grant you. Early on in his mission, he had people following him. He had popularity, right? Sure, he had the crowds following him. But while he was still alive, before he died, towards the end of his life, what happened? They deserted him. Just a few? All of them. Everybody deserted Jesus Christ. We find him alone at his death. There were no more crowds seeking him. There was no one wanting to make him king. They were, crucify him, right? I mean, everybody wanted him dead. Even his disciples, his closest disciples, who even preached on in his name, where were they at his death? They hid. They fell away. They left them alone in the garden when he needed them. They left them alone when he was at the trials. No one defended him in those trials. They left them alone as he hung on that cross. Tell me there was a movement. There was no movement. They were gone. They left them. They didn't know what he was talking about. Well, they remembered what he talked about, but remember what the crucifixion did? It destroyed you as a man, as your reputation. Everything you stood for was worthless. You're not worth anything. And that was real because they saw him hanging on that cross. That they knew because even the Jews said, yeah, he's cursed. Deuteronomy 21. The man's cursed. I don't know what he was doing for the last 3 years, but this is proof he's cursed. God doesn't lie. Everyone left him. There was no movement. And it's a historical fact that he was deserted. Dying, humiliating on that cross. Nobody stood up for him. They were all ashamed. And both the Bible record and secular history gives us this information, tells us. Left alone without that religious movement that we think started prior to his death, in fact, did not. It's in fact, his death stopped the movement. Look what Tacitus said. We read it yesterday, right? Look what he said. And a most mischievous superstition thus checked for the moment. What does that mean? Thus checked for the moment. It means as far as the world was concerned, it was over. The death stopped. It, whatever it was, it stopped it. That's his words, an enemy of the gospel, the enemy of Christ. He recognized it was stopped. It didn't start the movement. What Tacitus was doing, not realizing it, he's confirming everything that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were saying. Everyone left them. It's over. It's over. The dream was only a dream. It's over. And if it didn't break out again, as this man, this Roman orator, this Roman senator wrote, if it didn't break out again in Judea, we wouldn't be here today talking about it. Right? We would not even be talking about it if it didn't break out again, because the movement was checked. The movement stopped, was dead, and it should have stayed dead with the man. Christus, as Tacitus calls him. He wouldn't even be writing anything. He couldn't write anything about the story if it stayed checked. So the fact is that everything started after the man Jesus was dead. That's, well, did it start? Well, it had to, because I'm here as a Christian. The movement's here, so sometime between his death and today, this thing started. And we went and we're looking at evidence of the first, second, third, fourth centuries on what they were facing after this man was killed. And when you consider the nature of his death, the way he was hung on that cross, the impact that had on everybody, I mean everybody, it then becomes even more significant. There's more meaning to it because of the kind of death that he died. Nobody could hardly want to get behind anything this man said. It had a devastating effect on his followers, that we know. And there's no examples of in history of movements starting like this under such circumstances. You can read in the Gospels about the bad effect that it had. Oh, remember, yesterday we said, remember the two guys on the road to Emmaus? When he was talking with Jesus, they said, oh, but we thought he was the Messiah. We thought he was. And then towards the end of Luke, one of his own apostles said, I'm not going to believe it. You're telling me he was raised from the dead? I'm not going to believe it. No, can't be. Impossible. Unless I see him, of course. Evidence. Thomas needed evidence. And don't be ashamed, friends. You need evidence. Peter 1:21. What? 3 minutes? Okay. We're not going to get through it. That's okay. We'll pick up next one. So, you need evidence, and that's why we're talking about this. Thomas said, I won't believe it, and I saw it. So, if the resurrection didn't happen, and it never occurred, then what natural event or events caused this movement to start rethinking about the Messiah? It couldn't be his death. Okay, well, you know what? I'll go through this quickly. Oh, I know what it was. I'm a non-believer. I know what it was. I know it wasn't the resurrection. And I definitely know it can't be his death. That's impossible. Ah, it was the idea, the thought of the resurrection. Yeah, that had to be it. They liked the idea of the resurrection. Give me a break. Yeah, I had someone actually tell me, people liked the idea of the resurrection because of all the suffering and pain that they were going through. Anyone pick up on that? They liked the idea and the suffering because of the pain they're going through, so they wanted to believe in an afterlife. I've heard that. Maybe you have too. Wait a minute. They're going through the pain and the suffering because they believe in Jesus Christ. That's the only reason why they're going through it. And why do they believe in Jesus Christ? What natural event gave them that thing? Because if they don't believe in Jesus Christ and you give your honor to Caesar, you don't get persecuted. You see the logic there? You see the reasoning that we need to use? Don't tell me that they were going through hard times and that's why they believed in it. No. And we also talked about yesterday that reversal of death was totally opposite their concept of thinking. It's impossible for someone to come from the... You can't take a dead body and when he comes up and walks like he's breathing again. It's impossible. Well, we know it's impossible too. It doesn't happen. They didn't think that happened. So don't tell me that they wanted to believe in something that was impossible because they're being persecuted, but the only reason they're being persecuted is because they're believing something that's impossible. I don't have that much faith to believe that. So it was the story. Man, if it wasn't the belief, it was the story. The story, which consists of his death, his burial, and his resurrection. That's what convinced them. The story of it. Why were people believing a story if it wasn't real? Why would it go against everything they know? resurrection, reversal of death doesn't happen. Why would they believe a story just because some guy, this old Jewish man, would come up to him and say, oh, I got to tell you about the resurrection, and you want me to what? Believe that I can come back from the dead? Uh-huh. And I'm gonna be treated like your friends are being treated? Hey, by the way, what's all those scars all over your face from? Oh, I was stoned to death. Oh, you want me to believe your story, Paul? How did he get them to believe his story? Why did they believe the story? Made up? I don't have that kind of faith to believe that thought, to believe that that's the way it happened. And remember, I'm trying to help my non-believing friend out here. Give me the natural event, the natural causes that allowed this to happen. We're going to end here, and we'll continue right where we left off for later. We don't have time for Q&A, but we will have more time after our worship service. Thank you very much. Appreciate your attention.